It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Nigeria's president meets with families of abducted schoolgirls. Libyan suicide bombers attack army base in Benghazi. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan Tuesday met in Abuja with parents of some of the more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram militants in April. Presidential spokesman Ruben Abati said the meeting was frank and participants spoke their minds. He also said the government continues its search for those schoolgirls.
The government has since set up a national information center, which provides information on a daily basis. And then you also have the Directorate of Defense Information, which keeps everybody up to date on a daily basis.
He said security agencies have credible information about the whereabouts of the girls, but declined to provide specifics. He said the president repeated his promise to find and secure the release of the girls. The meeting follows another suspected Boko Haram attack, believed to have killed scores of people in the northeastern town of Demboa. Monday, authorities said the attack prompted more than 15,000 to flee the area. Peace talks between the government of Central African Republic and rebels were suspended Tuesday in Congo-Brazzaville after the main rebel Silika group failed to show up. Monday, Silika leader Moussa Dafani said a partition is needed in CAR before the mostly Muslim Silika can hold talks with mostly Christian anti-Balaka militants. Speaking at UN headquarters in New York Tuesday, actress Mia Farrow met with reporters after just having returned from CAR.
For now, what I wish for is for humanitarian aid access to all the people so they don't all die of starvation. And I wish for a cessation of the violence in Central African Republic so that people can reclaim the tatters of their lives and rebuild. It will take a generation. This kind of destruction will take time. There's been too much killing to say, well, in a month or a year, all will be forgotten. But you want to see the road toward peace.
It was her fourth trip to the region as the UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador. Relief organizations say at least 2,000 people have been killed in CAR unrest, more than a million displaced. Researchers meeting in Cameroon warned that Africa could lose up to 30% of its animal and plant species. Moki Edwin-Kinzinger reports.
Loggers are cutting down trees to meet unrelenting timber demand from China, Europe, and the United States. Meanwhile, countries are recording 3% population growth per year, and land that was once covered by forest is being used for homes, industries, and plantations for cash crops. An example of the animals disappearing is the African chimpanzee. Mary Catherine Gonda of the Department of Biology at Drexel University says the chimp's forest home is disappearing and the animals themselves continue to be hunted and sold as food in and around the Congo Basin forest.
What will happen over the next 20 years, the distribution of those chimpanzees will change. Their habitat will change fundamentally, and it will no longer be around. So it's a very real threat. The habitats for those chimpanzees will be gone.
The Congo Basin region of Central Africa contains the second largest tropical rainforest in the world and is an important source of livelihood for millions of people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In Libya, twin suicide bombings Tuesday at an army base in Benghazi killed at least four soldiers. Special Forces Commander Wanis Abu Kamara said the bombers drove in two cars. The first exploded at the base's gate, the other detonated after speeding past the gate, although it was away from buildings. There was no immediate claim for responsibility. The attack came on the second day of clashes between the army and Islamist militia in Benghazi. Two journalists in Zimbabwe won a victory for free speech Tuesday, the Constitutional Court striking down a statute making defamation a crime punishable by up to 20 years in jail. The two had published a story naming security agents for allegedly abducting human rights and opposition activists in 2008. The best sense of smell on Earth belongs to the African elephant, according to researchers at the University of Tokyo. The new study found African elephants have 2,000 genes dedicated to recognizing odor, twice as many as dogs, five times as many as humans. Researchers see the phenomenon as crucial to the elephant's survival. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has met the families of the kidnapped schoolgirls.
The meeting was frank, it was open, it was interactive. Mr. President invited, you know, all of the people present to say their minds, and they spoke their minds.
Rumi Abate is the spokesman for President Jonathan. The U.S. Embassy is training Nigerian electoral workers. Activists called on Gambia's government to improve its human rights record. A Zimbabwe court strikes down a law which makes defamation a crime. And could South Africa's latest strike be coming to an end soon?
10%, I think, is what we have been looking for, a double-digit settlement. And workers, I'm sure that they will be willing to accept that. But if employers want the strike to come to an end, they should not tamper with Section 37.
Vuyo Lufele is the Secretary General for NAMSA Western Cape Province, and a new VOA documentary focuses on the stigma of AIDS. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Parents of the more than 200 girls kidnapped from northern Nigeria met Tuesday with President Goodluck Jonathan to express their grief. As Heather Murdoch reports for VOA from Abuja, local doctors say the kidnapping and continued terror attacks have psychologically devastated families in the region.
Tensions are high at Nigeria's presidential office, known locally as the Villa, as four shiny red buses pull into secured gates. The buses carry about 200 residents of Chibok, mostly parents of girls kidnapped in April by Boko Haram militants. There are also more than 50 girls who escaped the militants shortly after their abduction. Presidential spokesman Ruben Abadi says the families had a formal closed-door meeting with Mr. Jonathan in the villa.
The meeting was frank, it was open, it was interactive. Mr. President invited, you know, all of the people present to say their minds, and they spoke their minds.
Abadi told journalists they are not permitted to speak to the Chibok parents or girls because it is a controlled program. The president, he says, repeated his promise to find the girls, a promise that has been repeated many times since they were kidnapped more than 3 months ago. Abadi also denies reports that Damboa, an area that neighbors Chibok, has been overrun by Boko Haram militants who reportedly hoisted black flags over towns after killing more than 100 residents and burning homes over the weekend.
Mr. President's primary concern is one to ensure the release of the girls, and also secondly to defend the integrity of the Nigerian state. And that is why, you know, the operation against terror is a continuous one, is a determined one, and no part of Nigeria will be allowed to be overtaken by terrorists.
Doctors say terror is a mainstay of everyday life for the Chibok families, and as the nightmare drags on, psychological damage deepens within the community. Dr. Denladi Seladrissa says he is personally aware of at least four of the kidnapped girls' parents being killed by Boko Haram since the abductions. Others have reported 11 deaths of parents, making things worse for the community now and for the girls if they are ever rescued.
The problem is overwhelming, and the support is very limited for now. But we want to believe that before time runs out, more hands will come into, and then we are going to have a proper counseling team that will help the community.
He says grief counselors have been trained to help the community cope, but Boko Haram attacks have prevented those outside Chibok from moving in. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
The U.S. Embassy in Nigeria is organizing a series of workshops to train public affairs officers of the Independent National Electoral Commission, known as INEC, to prepare them for interaction with stakeholders in the run-up to next year's general election. Nick Dazan, INEC's National Deputy Director for Public Affairs, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the training will help the commission in its engagement with civil society organizations and the voters.
We started the first leg of this training in Lagos at the Lagos Consulate on the 18th, And we started the second leg of the same training for the public affairs officers in the northern part of the country yesterday, and we are going to end the training on the 25th of this month. That is on Friday.
How will this be beneficial to Electoral Commission officials ahead of next year's general election?
It will be of tremendous value to the commission in the sense that, one, the public affairs officers will be in a position to do their jobs more confidently and more competently than they used to do before. The kind of training that we were exposed to by especially the lead facilitator, that is Darwin Johnson, was such that it exposed our public affairs officers as to how they can write press releases, as to how they can organize press conferences, as to how they can conduct these press conferences, and as to how they can communicate effectively with stakeholders. As you know, between now and the 2015 general elections, we are going to do a lot of communicating with stakeholders, especially the political parties, the media, civil society organizations, and the voters themselves.
How will this have an impact on the negative perception of Nigerian prospective voters of the commission's ability to organize credible vote in next year's elections?
Well, elections generally are a matter of perception. The fact that the EMB itself has to be seen to be up and doing and conduct elections that are credible, that are fair, and that are transparent, Nigerians also need, and the members of the international community also need, to see these elections truly transparent. And it is the public affairs officers that can help the EMB to project ANEC as an organization that is determined and irrevocably resolved to conducting elections that are free and fair.
Nick Dazan is National Deputy Director for Public Affairs of INEC. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Activists across West Africa held protests on Tuesday on the 20th anniversary of President Yahya Jammeh's seizure of power to raise awareness about what they call Gambia's dire human rights situation. Human rights groups are demanding the Gambian government put an end to alleged repression, torture, and forced disappearances. Jennifer Lazuta has more from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
Human rights, Gambia! Human rights, Gambia!
Dozens of protesters gathered outside the Gambian embassy in Senegal's capital to, in their words, raise awareness about ongoing human rights violations in Gambia. Activists in other cities are calling for the Gambian government to revoke laws they say have led to a culture of intimidation, harassment, and detention over the past 20 years. Fatou Diagne is the director of Article 19, an international organization that advocates for freedom of expression and access to information.
We are here to denounce 20 years of oppression, 20 years of lack of freedom in the Gambia, but also to show a sign of solidarity on all the victims of human rights violations, especially those who have lost their lives, those who disappeared also, and those who have been tortured, maltreated, and those who just lost their freedom, who are in prison for just wanting to be part of the way their countries have been run, and those who wanted just to express their views.
The Gambian government has previously denounced what it calls a relentless smear campaign against its human rights record. In a statement in October 2013, it said Gambia's enemies have set up organizations to spread lies and make what it called false, outrageous, and unfounded statements about the state of human rights in the country. But many Gambians say they have been subjected to years of oppression and fear since the 1994 military coup that brought President Yahya Jammeh to power. President Jammeh reinstated the death penalty and enacted restrictive freedom of expression laws, which, according to human rights defenders, are so vague that they can be used to charge anyone who expresses any sort of dissent. Amnesty International, which has documented the unpublicized executions of death row inmates and torture of human rights activists in Gambia, say it is time for things to change. Francois Pachual is Amnesty International's West Africa campaigner.
And we are really calling for the international community and the government of Senegal, but also the government of Gambia, to put an end to this regime of fear by, repealing legal provisions in the criminal code which are used to restrict dissent, release political prisoners, and to hold perpetrators of human rights violations to account and bring them to justice.
Protesters gathered Tuesday in countries such as Burkina Faso, Ivory Coast, Mali, Ghana, Togo, Senegal, and Sierra Leone to express solidarity with the Gambian Rights Campaign. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
Today's Wednesday, July 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The Constitutional Court of Zimbabwe on Tuesday struck down a section of the hated law which makes defamation a criminal offense. The case was brought by the Zimbabwe Independent Newspaper and its staffers. In his decision, Justice Luke Malaba said the law breached freedom of expression. Lofty Dube of the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe says there's need to repeal or align most media laws in Zimbabwe with the country's new constitution.
What the Constitutional Court has just done is to confirm what the Zimbabweans have been saying in the last 34 years, that criminal defamation has no place in a democracy, and we expect Zimbabwe to be a democracy, and we expect the country not to conform to things like criminal defamation. And what that means is that we shall not want to see the police going around picking from these statutes that have not been realigned with the Constitution. We hope they will not start going to some of these laws and picking specifics. So that might bring criminal defamation through the back door.
Obviously, this is a milestone, Mr. Dube, but journalists still worry about other hostile pieces of legislation, such as the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, as well as the Public Order and Security Act.
If you look at our new constitution, if you look at Section 61 and 62, we talk about freedom of expression and access to information. These laws, if you apply the constitution to the current laws that we have, a lot of laws will need to be amended or repealed or aligned with the new constitution. And when that happens, we then are going to have a scenario where the freedom of the media will be guaranteed, where bad laws such as IPA, POSTA, Official Secrets Act, the Criminal Procedures Act, as the news organizations, will not be used, because they will then conform to the. And as a result, they cannot be used as an externalist because they will be altered via the constitution.
That's Lofty Dube of the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe. He was speaking with reporter Untungamile Nkomo of VOA's Zimbabwe service. The National Union of Mental Workers of South Africa, known as NAMSA, the country's largest labor union, is considering employers' latest offer aimed at ending a three-week-old strike in the country's steel and engineering sector. At the intervention of the Labour Ministry, the Steel and Engineering Federation of Southern Africa, SAFSA, agreed on Tuesday to increase by 10% the salaries of three categories of workers over the next 3 years. Vuyo Lufele, Secretary General for NAMSA in Western Cape Province, says the workers have long wanted a double-digit wage increase and are likely to accept the 10% offer. But Vuyo tells me that if the employers want the strike to end, they should drop their demand to amend Section 37 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement.
Employers have offered finally 10% for 3 years. And that applied mostly on the lowest paid. It's going to be 10% for this year, 10% next year, and 10% the third. But now they've done that with the conditions attached. If you remember, there is a Section 37 of our collective agreement, which states that if agreement had been signed, then for the duration of the agreement, no trade union would be allowed to negotiate on anything that is part of the collective agreement. And that's where NUMSA members have said they will fight tooth and nail until they die for that one. And the employers are saying they are waiting until Friday to hear from us, putting threats that they will take back what is the offer currently if we do not agree until Friday. And we are saying, look, as NUMSA, the employers, if they are not willing to concede to that demand or to leave Section 37, the strike will continue.
Does this latest 10%, does it cover majority of the workers?
This 10% covers majority of our members, because from the first year, grade F, G, and H will get 10%. And on the second year, grade G and H will get 10%. And then on the third year, grade H will get 10%.
And that is where majority of our members you will find in the industry. But this is a proposed agreement that is coming from the Department of Labor and the facilitator. And employers are willing to give to the workers, but with the condition that workers give away Section 37.
Has there been violence connected with the strike? Are your members involved in any violent act since the strike began?
Yeah, I can say that from our side, we have not registered violence, but employers are complaining of violence and intimidation and so on and so on. But it's something that we condemn if such exists, although we have not registered such, but we condemn if there is such thing.
So, will you look ahead to Friday? What do you think the union is going to come up with? Are they going to accept the 10% or not?
Depending on the workers, 10% I think is what we have been looking for, a double-digit settlement. And workers, I'm sure that they will be willing to accept that. But if employers want the strike to come to an end, they should not tamper with Section 37.
Vuyo Lufele is the Secretary General for NAMSA Western Cape Province. He was speaking with me from Cape Town. Despite major medical advances in treating AIDS, one powerful force stands in the way of treatment for many afflicted with the disease, stigma. A special Voice of America documentary, Living in the Shadows, pulled back the curtain on this challenge in the fight against AIDS. VOA's Anita Powell attended the screening, and she brings us this report from the 20th International AIDS Conference in Melbourne, Australia.
Stigma has stuck to AIDS from the very start. When the virus first began to emerge in the 1980s, it cut a wide swath through two groups that have historically faced their own stigma, gay men and intravenous drug users. More than 30 years later, however, the face of AIDS has changed. Today's new HIV patient is statistically likely to be a heterosexual African woman. But as VOA's new documentary, Living in the Shadows, shows, as the reach of AIDS has expanded, stigma remains and seems as stubborn as this highly adaptable virus. AIDS stigma remains from Cambodia to Nigeria to Uganda. It even persists in 2014 in developed nations like the U.S. and Canada, says immunologist Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Fauci noted the powerful role of stigma in discussing the famous recent case of the Mississippi baby, a baby born with HIV contracted from her mother, then treated aggressively and put in remission for just over 2 years before again showing signs of infection. The baby's mother, he said, did not get prenatal care that would have identified her HIV status and protected the baby from contracting the virus. That failure to get care, he said, is often a consequence of stigma.
In the United States, a developed nation, there is still, as shown on the film, even in the city that I live in, considerable stigma associated with it, some of which is very subtle, that prevents people from getting into the appropriate care at the appropriate time. So there's a lot of implications of that.
In Nigeria, where it is against the law to be gay, gay rights activist Afani Kelly Orazulike painted a dark picture of the stigma around AIDS and homosexuality.
It's incredibly amazing how we have lived through the work that we do in Nigeria and how we have been able to survive in terms of ensuring that people have access to healthcare services and access to social justice, because living by the day gets more scarier than it was the previous day.
And AIDS stigma affects not just patients, but their providers as well. Dr. Julio Montaner has worked in the field for decades and says that stigma could be holding back important advances. He described, for example, his struggles in getting government approval to set up a safe needle exchange site for drug users in Vancouver, Canada.
Yet we suffer stigma by association. And, I don't see too many times when my friend, who is a cardiologist, gets asked, why do you do this work? What motivates you to do this work? Why are you so passionate about it? I mean, people accept that being a cardiologist, you're supposed to be passionate about cardiac disease. But we get asked that all the time. You know, how the hell do you care about people who use drugs and, you know, and this and that and the other thing?
Montaner does not offer an answer to that question. Why, he said, should he have to explain himself any more than any other doctor treating any other disease? That's one of the many questions that haunts this deadly virus and continues to plague the fight against AIDS. Anita Powell, VOA News, Melbourne, Australia.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa. Sporting, here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. Ugandan Joshua Cheptegei won the first medal at the IAAF World Junior Athletics Championships in Eugene, Oregon State, United States of America on Tuesday. Cheptegei clocked 28 minutes and 32.86 seconds to triumph in the men's 10,000 meters, the only final on the first day of the championships. Kenyan Elvis Cheboi and Nicholas Kosimbei followed to claim the silver and bronze medals, respectively, while Roblen Jan Aden set a Djibouti national junior record of 29 minutes and 43.49 seconds. Staying in Eugene, Nigerian Bashiru Abdullahi and Ghana's Yakubu Ibrahim each set their respective national junior men's 110-meter hurdles record. Abdullahi clocked 14.04 seconds, while Ibrahim ran 14.61 seconds. Later, Mzamo Mgomezulu set a Swaziland junior men's record in the 100 meters in a time of 10.84 seconds. In football, Tunisia's under-23 team pipped their peers and hosts Qatar by a solitary goal in Doha on Tuesday. The two sides are preparing for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympic football qualifiers. Elsewhere, the Algerian national football team players have donated $100,000 to help alleviate the suffering of children in the Gaza Strip in Palestine, the Algeria Football Federation revealed in Algiers. The children are trapped in the crossfire between the Israeli army and Hamas militants in over 2 weeks of fierce fighting in the Gaza Strip. The Algerian players noted that fans in Gaza supported Algeria's campaign during the recent FIFA World Cup in Brazil, where Africa's highest-placed nation on the FIFA rankings progressed beyond the group stage for the first time in four outings at the World Cup. Finally, 18 African nations are among 71 countries and territories that have converged in Glasgow, Scotland for the 2014 British Commonwealth Games. African teams that will file through the opening ceremony today, Wednesday, are Botswana, Cameroon, Ghana, Lesotho, Kenya, Malawi, Mauritius, Mozambique, and Namibia. Others are Nigeria, Rwanda, Seychelles, Sierra Leone, South Africa, Swaziland, Tanzania, Uganda and Zambia. Over the next 11 days, sportsmen and women are vying for medals in athletics, badminton, boxing, cycling, diving, gymnastics, hockey, judo, lawn bowls, netball, powerlifting, rugby, shooting, squash, swimming, triathlon, table tennis, weightlifting, and wrestling. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Wednesday morning comes from Mohamed Ahmed Masu of Monrovia, Liberia. He says, "Dear VOA, I call on President Salva Kiir of South Sudan to give peace a chance. Accusing his former vice president, Dr. Riek Machar, of corruption is absurd and untimely. I think the president should have first instituted an inquiry if he thought Dr. Machar was complicit in corruption. I am of the conviction that President Kiir's accusation is another attempt to undermine the ongoing peace negotiations." We thank you, Mohamed Ahmed Mansour of Monrovia, Liberia, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Gunmen attacked a military camp in the Democratic Republic of Congo's capital on Tuesday, but the government says the situation was quickly brought under control. And Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has met with parents of some of the more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram militants in April. That's it for this Wednesday, July 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Michael Oman, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Botti saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.